Welcome to Get the Balance Right, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Heather Zeitzwolf. Learn how to run a more profitable, purpose-driven business through my conversations with thought leaders, CEOs, and renegades in digital media, marketing, advertising, and design. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Get the Balance Right podcast. I am your host, Heather Zeitzwolf. On today's show, we are talking about sales. Yes, sales. This is a two-part series where we're getting two perspectives on the same subject. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Max Landisman, who has an educational and entertaining YouTube station called Maxin TV. But for today's show, I am joined by the sales maven herself, Nikki Rausch. Although the two guests have different approaches to sales, both are very effective. But they do have some really important similarities to their style. They both listen to their prospects, they build rapport, and they have a mutual desire to resolve the pain point the prospect has. I think these key elements makes their sales approach both so effective, even though they are totally different types of people. Why is it when people think of sales, they often think of sleazy tactics like Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross? Remember that ABC, always be closing? That seems to be what people think of, including me. Many of my relatives were in sales, including my father. My father's approach to sales was not based on solving someone's pain point. It was purely out for the kill. If the prospect had cash in hand and a pulse, that is all that mattered. Of course, that period when he was selling was a totally different time. His form of selling ingrained in society that stereotype of the sleazy salesman. My father sold all kinds of products and services, but notably, to perpetuate the stereotype even further, he even sold used cars. Back in my dad's selling heyday, which spanned from the 1940s through the 1980s, sales was a totally different beast. Locked in celluloid history, the 1969 documentary, The Salesman, is an excellent time capsule of this selling style, as it captures the chain-smoking door-to-door Bible salesman in true cinema verite style. However, that's in the past. We live in a different time, where the sleaze is no longer tolerated. Buyers have become savvier, and they're tired of being sold to. As people in society, we are constantly being bombarded with marketing and advertising. When it finally comes down to the sale, we don't want any extra pressure. We'd rather read a few reviews and know exactly what we want. If that product or service doesn't serve our need, well, then we'll just surf the internet to find someone or something else that can provide it. Regardless of this shift in the landscape, we as entrepreneurs still fear coming across as sleazy. Whether we want the role or not, we are salespeople by default for our business. It just comes with the territory. It's an area where many entrepreneurs feel out of their element, uncomfortable, and can have a high level of anxiety. But our guest today, Nikki Rausch, can help you move beyond that mindset through her effective techniques. But more about that in a few minutes. In sales, besides the act of selling, there are other important elements to consider. This is my department, tracking and metrics. Yeah. Do you guys track and measure sales in your business? Do you have a good handle on your sales funnel? How are you tracking prospects? Do you have a client relation management system? It's also known as a CRM. If you said, I don't know, to any of my questions, well, then now is a great time to start getting a handle on your sales. Here's the thing, without tracking and metrics, your sales funnel can become a guessing game and your cash flow becomes a shot in the dark. Without knowing this information, your decisions as an owner are completely impaired and can easily put you in a dangerous place where you're overstaffed and you don't have enough money in the bank to run payroll. Ugh. And you are just flying by the seat of your pants. I have a few sales metrics that you can put into place if you haven't already. First, tracking where your prospects are coming from and what the conversion rate is from prospect to buyer. If you haven't been doing this, you need to start. So what you want to do is look at where your prospects are coming from and did they convert into a sale. For instance, if you have a much higher conversion rate with prospects that come from referrals rather than, say, Facebook ads, then you should put more effort into your referral process and spend less on Facebook ads. Second, let's talk about win rate. Not all prospects will convert to sales. Calculate your win rate. That's the number of sales divided by your prospects. So if you have a 100% win rate, that does not necessarily mean that you are a great salesperson. It could mean that your prices are too low. That's a bad thing. Based on your industry, the win rate number will fluctuate. For instance, the average for advertising agencies is around 25 to 30%. If your win rate is really low, it doesn't mean that you're a lousy salesperson. It could mean a number of other things, such as you have too much competition, you have the wrong prospects, or you're being seen as a commodity rather than differentiating yourself from the pack. That is a problem and you need to correct that. You can't just guess why you lost a sale. You'll never know unless you ask, which leads me to number three. You want to know for sure why you lost a sale. Now, this one can be kind of tricky because prospects may not want to tell you up front. Maybe they're thinking that they're going to hurt your feelings, or they just don't want to come across as, I don't know, abrasive or whatever reason that they have. But if you dare to probe, they are usually going to tell you the answer. If that seems really uncomfortable, which I'm sure for some people that is uncomfortable to ask why you lost the sale, then you know what? You can just send them a follow-up email with a few choices and allow them to pick or write in their answer. Some of these options might be too expensive, not a good fit, doesn't meet my needs, not ready to commit, etc. You get the idea. By tracking this information, you can see if there are trends. This is the magic of data. Now, the data doesn't give you the whole story, but you can start taking action on your findings. For instance, if you have a high percentage of not ready to commit, then you're probably trying to sell folks who aren't at the right stage in the sales process. If you're ranking high with not meeting their needs, then examine what services you can reasonably add to gain more sales. There are many other sales metrics that you can use to give you more insight. The best way to organize this information is in a dashboard. That way, you can avoid digging through the data to get the answer that you want. If you need help setting up these metrics in your business, please schedule a discovery meeting with me to discuss. You can find my link in the show notes. My guest today is Nikki Rausch. She is also known as the Sales Maven. Nikki is incredible. She hosts her own podcast, runs her own sales supportive community called the Sales Maven Society, and has a coaching program where she trains entrepreneurs and others to sell without sleaze. Through these platforms, she educates on her signature sales framework called the Selling Staircase. And she teaches other techniques, which I have coined as Nikki-isms. Yes, I am a big fan of Nikki's, and you can tell during the show because I totally nerd out on her isms. If Nikki is new to you, then man, you are in for a real treat. If you follow Nikki, then stay tuned because I asked her some questions she's never been asked before. Yep, but you'll have to stay to the end to hear my goofy questions I've always wanted to ask Nikki Rausch. All right, are you ready? Here is my conversation with Nikki Rausch. Nikki Rausch in the house. I am so excited to have you on my podcast today.
I'm so excited to be here, Heather. Thank you so much for having me on.
For the people in the audience that don't know you yet, can you just tell a little bit about yourself and your business and your podcast?
Yes, thank you. My company is Sales Maven. I am a sales coach, trainer, podcaster, author, and I really focus on the conversation side of sales. So I teach strategy and structure for that sales conversation. I have a signature framework. It's called the Selling Staircase, of how to walk somebody from that very first connection, that very first introduction, all the way to the place where you exchange dollars for services, and break it down in a way that allows for you the person who is selling to be authentic, to be yourself, and be more strategic in that conversation. So that's what I do. I live in Boise, Idaho with my husband, and just really absolutely love working with my clients. And I work with clients around the world. And the podcast is called Sales Maven. And on the podcast, I share sales techniques and strategies and tips. And I do on-air coaching calls and I do sales success stories with my clients, which is a lot of fun.
You also help people learn how to sell without the sleaze.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Sales seems to be one of those areas where people, it gives them this sort of icky feeling like they have to do it, like it's a terrible thing. But I know that you come from a position where it's, you are offering something that the person needs. So it's not sleazy. But do you want to expand on that a little?
I often say sales isn't something you do to somebody. It's something you do with somebody. And it's not your job to try to convince somebody to buy from you. And I think that perspective of, oh, I've got to convince people how great I am or how my product is the only product. I think that is where the sleaze comes in, frankly. And so it's not your job to convince people. What your job is in the selling process, to be really candid, your job is to understand, does this person have a need or a problem or something that they're wanting to change in their life? Do you have a solution that would help them in some way? And then can you lay it out in a way that makes it really easy for them to understand what you're offering and allow for them to decide yes or no, I want to buy from you? And that's really the sales process broken down into the most like basic concept. And when you start approaching sales from the perspective that it's about building relationships, I always say relationship first, rapport always, that you're doing it from this place of really wanting to be of service to the other person and doing it in a really authentic, kind way, you don't have to worry about somebody walking away going, ew, I feel like I got to go take a shower after talking to that person. It's really conversational. Sales should be conversational. And conversation means two people speaking. It's not you talking at people. It's talking with them.
Exactly. Now you have, I'm just going to call them Nikki-isms. There's different things that you say that I've picked up on. And I have to tell you that when I'm in the sales process, I'm always thinking to myself, what would Nikki do? What would Nikki do? And if before I get on a sales call, I think about those things. But sometimes I get on that sales call and Nikki has poofed away and it's me, what you call word vomiting. And I get into this, maybe it's a nervous thing that I just, bleh. So what is it about word vomiting? You talk about that. That's one of your isms, I think.
It is. I do talk about word vomiting all the time. So the idea of word vomiting, it often comes up when you're nervous or you're not sure what to say or you're uncomfortable with silence. And so it's the idea of really giving too much information so that the other person gets into this mode of, okay, I'm so sorry that I asked you a question, or, oh my gosh, how can I get out of this conversation quickly? Because frankly, none of us, even if you think of the visual of it, nobody wants to be word vomited on. And so when you learn how to be more strategic with the words that you choose, with the way you lay out the conversation, it gets easier. And you frankly, you don't have to say as much. So that's the idea here, is that nobody wants to be word vomited on. And when you can take a step back and know, I know to say just enough to allow for a conversation to unfold. And I know what to say just enough to move the person to the next step if they're interested. And then I know just enough of how to close that sale. And then I know exactly what to say to collect payment. And now done. The sale is done and it's awesome.
One of the things you talk about is when you go into that sales conversation, I guess you'd call it maybe a discovery call, that really it's you, the seller, has to have control of that meeting.
Yes.
And that's one of those areas where it's sometimes, at least for me, I know the potential client might be start asking me questions and I'm like, okay, I'm eager to answer questions, but then the whole thing derails and my Nikki on my shoulder, poof, she's gone away. What are some tips that you have for people to keep that sales conversation steering the way that you want it to go?
There's a couple of things to do. One is that you always want to pre-frame at the start of the call. There's a couple of reasons to pre-frame. One is it creates safety between you and the other person. And frankly, if somebody doesn't feel safe with you, they're much less likely to be revealing about how to earn their business. And so safety is crucial. So we're going to pre-frame because we want to create safety. And also it does allow for you to step into a little bit of a lead situation. And it doesn't mean like, I'm going to control this conversation. If you ask a question, I'm going to ignore it. I don't mean that, but just by doing a simple pre-frame. So an example of a pre-frame would to say something like, Heather, I'm so excited to chat with you today. The purpose of the call is to find out a little bit more about your business, share a little bit about ways that we might potentially work together. We're scheduled to talk for about 20 to 30 minutes. Does that still work for you? And then I'm going to wait and let you say, hopefully, yes. And then I'm going to say, now, may I start with a couple quick questions? Because you want to take the lead in that. Because if it gets to where the person's like, okay, I'm just going to start from the beginning. And then they go, so when I was 5, and now you're in story mode, and story mode, as much as I love a story, and I am like, I really love a story, it can be a time suck and it can derail the conversation because you never really get back to understanding what's the problem, what's the need, and then offering a way to potentially work together. Pre-framing is the first thing. And then back to where you started with this question is, if you find that you've gotten off track, it's okay to say, now, it looks like we only have about 15 minutes left together. Is it okay if I ask you a couple quick questions? Bring it right back around. And they're going to say yes. And as long as things are going really well, it's okay to just bring it back around. And then also by pointing out the time, it starts to get in their mind of, oh yeah, we better get back on track because I also have a meeting in 15 minutes and I want to hear what's the next step for us.
You make it sound so easy, Nikki.
It is easy. It's supposed to be easy, frankly. When it feels really hard and difficult, that's usually, it's either a confidence issue or it's just not having some of that structure. Like I love a process and I love a structure and I teach a lot of structure because when you have a process or a structure, it's your fallback. It's, oh, things aren't going exactly how I want. Where am I right now? And oh, I know what to say or I know what to do right now to get us back into moving forward in a very specific direction.
That's great. What about having notes? Do you think that's okay going into a conversation with a potential client, especially right now? Now we're in Zoom land. So just having some, maybe put together an outline beforehand, would you recommend that?
Yeah, I love notes. And I actually recommend for your consultation / discovery calls, whatever you call it. I call them discovery, but some people call them consultations. Whatever you call it, it's nice to have a set list of questions. And it doesn't mean that you have to ask every question, but you do want to have them in front of you because otherwise you can get derailed. There's a, I think it's like from Alice in Wonderland. There's some quote of, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. Like you have to know where you're going. And by having some notes, having an outline, it allows for you to stay on track. Now, the only thing I will say is you don't want to sound like you're reading from a script because real sales happen through real conversation, and conversation is not structured. It's not, okay, we got to fit it in this like tiny little like framework. I say this, you say that. I love scripts and I give tons of idea scripts for clients, but I always say you have to write your own version. I'm going to give you a version to start with, but you have to write your version so it feels and sounds authentic when you're in that conversation.
I love that. Okay, now I want to go through some of the other Nikki-isms. One of my favorites is, here, kitty, kitty. Now, I am a cat person, but beyond that, can you explain what that here, kitty, kitty means?
Yes. I mentioned earlier that I teach a 5-step process for selling, and it's called the selling staircase. And step 2 of the selling staircase is about creating curiosity. And frankly, being able to create curiosity is the most misstep in the selling process. And as a business owner or as an entrepreneur, if you don't know how to create curiosity about your business, you often don't ever get the chance to get to a discovery, to move to a proposal, to get to a close. So you're missing out on a lot of business when you don't know how to create curiosity. And I compare curiosity to the difference between how you call a dog and how you call a cat. I know that sounds a little crazy, but when you want to get your dog's attention, those of you who have dogs and you know how dogs operate, if you have this like really excited, come here, boy, come here, let's go do something. And dogs love that energy. They're like, oh my gosh, we're going to go for a walk, or I'm going to get a treat, or something fun's going to happen. And so they respond to that. And what can happen sometimes when you get that prospect in front of you, you think, oh my gosh, this is the perfect client for me. I'm so excited. And you show up with dog calling energy, which, by the way, results in word vomiting all over that person because you're so excited to talk to them. But as people, we don't respond to dog calling energy. Like, we don't want to be talked to that way. It turns people off, especially if they don't have much background with you. They don't have much rapport with you. The flip side of that is what I call catcalling energy. And I often say, think about how you call a cat. You do this thing where you go, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty. And it's supposed to be like, what? And even with a cat, doesn't mean a cat's going to come to you if you say that, but a cat might be like, I'll check you out. I'll give you a little bit of time here for you to entertain me or say something enticing. I often suggest to clients, one of the ways to create curiosity is to have what is known as a here, kitty, kitty response to a question. An example, I'm going in deep here. Is that okay, Heather?
Well, that's totally fine. Yeah.
Okay. An example of this would be, how do you answer just like a common question? Like, you can have here, kitty, kitty responses to almost any question, but one just to get you started is to think about, how do you answer the question, have you been, for instance? Now, you might have a standard answer. You might say, oh, I've been fine, or oh, I'm good, or oh yeah, we're staying at home and avoiding going out, or whatever. But none of those actually open the door for you to talk about your business or create any curiosity. I want you to start coming up with what I call here, kitty, kitty responses to have you been. Right. So if somebody says right now, hey, have you been? Have something that you want to talk about in your business. So for me right now, I might say, if somebody's like, oh, have you been? I might say, oh, I've been great. I'm finalizing the workbook for my next masterclass. Now, somebody may hear that and go, what's a masterclass? Or what do you mean workbook? Or what do you do, Nikki, that you would have to teach a class? Now that opens the door for me to give a response. I can tell a little bit about my next masterclass and how it works, but I'm not going to give too much information. My answer is going to be a couple sentences and see if they'd like some more information, if they have another question. So that's an example of how to create your here, kitty, kitty statements.
Ask me, how have I been?
Heather, how have you been lately?
I've been doing fabulous. I just had Nikki Rausch on my podcast.
Oh, you have a podcast? What's the premise behind your podcast? That's what's going to happen, is people are going to be like, oh, tell me more about your podcast. Now, they might say, who's Nikki Rausch? But the idea would be like, why would you have Nikki on your podcast? So think about, I love that. I like it too, because that's fun for me to hear that somebody's excited about having me on their podcast. But think about, will it open the door to talk a little bit more about what you want to talk about, which might be, yeah, I've got a podcast. And frankly, if you're not out doing this, people won't know to ask you. People won't know, like, Heather, you have a podcast? Like, oh, maybe I should check it out. Maybe I should listen, or I should recommend it to all the people I know that would benefit from hearing you. So have your here, kitty, kitty responses.
I love it. You mentioned the selling staircase. That's further in my notes. But since you mentioned that, let's jump to that, because
okay,
one of your other Nikki-isms is that you don't skip any steps on that staircase unless the potential buyer skips it for you. Can you tell the audience about what each one of these steps are? We'll just dive into each step just a little bit.
Yeah, sure. The five steps in the selling staircase, I'll go through them really quickly, and then I can dive into as much of any of them as you want. So the first step is the introduction. That's when somebody's first being introduced to you or introduced to your work, or maybe you're being introduced to them. And the idea there is to create a powerful first impression. Step two in the selling staircase is creating curiosity. And we talked a little bit about that already. Step three is the discovery process. And the idea of the discovery process is to ask strategic questions that move the person closer to hiring you. Once you've done a great discovery, you can move to step four, which is proposal. That's where you lay out ways that you could work together. And then step five is the close. And that's really about very specific language. And you mentioned this too. I teach, as the seller, as the person who wants to earn somebody's business, you are not allowed to skip steps in the selling staircase. And the caveat, the little like exception, is if somebody comes up to you and says, Heather, I've heard great things. I want to sign up. I want to coach with you. I'm totally ready. I'm totally in. I don't want you to say, hold up. We got to move back to introduction, right? I want you to say, great. Do you already know which program that you want? Yes or no? Okay, here's how to get signed up for it. And I can go ahead and take that credit card right now. They get to skip the step. If they come up and they're like, I'm ready to work, let's go. Then yes, they can skip steps, but you as the seller do not skip steps. And the way that you move somebody from each step is there's language involved in it. And I call it issuing invitations. And your job is to issue the invitation, because the person who's talking to you, they don't know what the process is. They don't know what the next step is. So it's your job to make it really easy for them. And the way you do that is by issuing an invitation to move to the next step.
Now, one of the ways that we might have to skip a step might be, there's another Nikki-ism coming up, buying signals. What are buying signals?
Buying signals are verbal and nonverbal cues that people give that indicate interest. It doesn't always mean I'm ready to buy, take my money, but it can, frankly. Sometimes a buying signal is, Heather, I know about you. I'm ready to work with you. How do I sign up? Okay, that's a huge buying signal, really obvious. But believe it or not, the reason I started even teaching buying signals is because I was hearing these super obvious buying signals, like, I would like to work with you. I'm ready to move forward. And I was hearing people go, oh, well, go check out my website. I was like, what? No, that person's ready to buy. Take the order. The idea of a buying signal is it's a verbal or nonverbal cue somebody gives that indicates interest. And your job is to then invite them to whatever the next step in the process is that's logical based on the signal they just gave.
Hey there, this is Heather. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. And if you are, if you wouldn't mind, please hit the subscribe button now. That way you'll never miss an episode. All right, now back to the podcast. One of the first things I heard about you was this whole approach to asking permission. I had a coach that told me about you and said that you say to ask permission. And so that was the first time I Googled who you were, and I was like, ask permission? What? So can you explain about what that other Nikki-ism is about, asking permission?
Heather, I think you know my work better than any podcaster I have ever been interviewed by. This makes me so tickled. So thank you for that. The idea of asking for permission, it's a way to move somebody to the next step. And oftentimes we kind of barrel through. So for instance, if you're in the discovery step and, oh my gosh, this is an ideal client. I already know how we could work together and what it's going to do for them in their life. You don't want to just start selling, because if you start selling, that's where it starts to feel icky and gross again. What you want to do is ask permission to see if they're ready to talk about ways to work together. So an example of this would be, let's say we have a great discovery call. I have a suspicion that being in the next masterclass is the right thing for you. So what I would do, my way to ask permission, is I would say, Heather, based on what you've shared with me so far, you sound like an ideal candidate for this next masterclass. Would you be open to hearing a little bit more about that? That's the permission. And when you ask permission, as soon as you're done with the permission question, you zip it and you wait for the other person to respond. You don't just barrel through and go, here's the next masterclass and here's the dates of it and here's how you pay for it and here's the, and you should just sign up right now by going to this website. Then it sounds like you're being salesy and it can turn somebody off.
Yeah, I think that's where I screw things up. I word vomit after that.
It's just learning. When you get really proficient at learning how to ask permission, it's such a rapport builder. People feel very respected in that moment. They also get to decide. And frankly, how we are in our society today is we mostly are getting talked at all the time. We're getting talked at through social media. We're getting talked at in our emails and our text messages, and we're sick of it. And so when somebody shows real respect of asking permission before they barrel on through, it's, oh, I feel so good about this relationship now. And I realize that you're going to be respectful of me. And frankly, if the answer is no, if you ask permission and somebody goes, if I say what I said to you about the masterclass and you go, yeah, I'm not really interested in a masterclass. Okay, then I don't need to waste your time or my energy telling you about something you're not interested in. Ask permission and it will make a world of difference in the way people respond to you.
Another thing that you've talked about is talking about price. Now, I know in my line of work, there's a lot of people that are offering three-tiered pricing. And I know that you like to start with the most expensive one, and then we go to the middle, and then the least expensive. But that whole idea of the price just to begin with, that's something that when we go into a discovery call, if the buyer or the potential buyer asks about price, we should probably have some kind of price ready. But if they don't ask about price, should we offer price?
Okay, so if you are in the discovery process, we're not talking about proposal process. We're not on that step yet. So when we're in the discovery, if somebody asks you about price, you need to have an answer. And your answer can't be, it depends. Even if there's a part of you right now that's thinking, but it does depend. You don't get to say it depends. What you would do is say prices typically range between this and this. And once we have a better idea of what would be the best fit for you, I'd be happy to talk specifics. Or if they say specifically, Nikki, what's the price of your masterclass? You have to give it. If you go, hey, you know, we'll get to that. By the way, this happened to me. I was on the call with somebody. Like I was in the position of being the client and she was taking forever to get through this process. And I was like, I really just want to hire you. Can you just tell me what the price is? And she's like, we're not there yet. So I'll get back to you. And that was it. That was the deal killer for me. I didn't hire her. I don't recommend her now because of it. And people ask me all the time for the type of service that she offers. Because I was like, no, you got to be ready. When somebody asks you about your price, you have to be ready to give it. Now, it doesn't mean that you just give it and you leave it there. You could give it and explain a little bit about what it is. And then you're going to issue an invitation. You have to follow price with an invitation to work with you. So if somebody says, Nikki, what's the price of your masterclass? I'm going to give the price of the masterclass. And then I'm going to say, is that something you'd be interested in? And then I'm going to zip it and wait.
That's another one of those Nikki-isms. Zip it and wait.
Yes. Knowing when to not speak is an advanced selling skill. Silence is an advanced selling skill. And when you get proficient at that too, everything gets easier in the selling process.
Believe me, when I've sent out prices for things, I'm like, okay, Nikki has told me not to make excuses, just keep my price. You also talk about not putting your own thoughts on what they think the price should be. Can you explain?
So I often talk about one of the biggest mistakes that we make in the selling process as the person who's in the seat of the seller. It's your business, it's your offer, it's your product, is we do two things. We project our limiting beliefs onto somebody else. We act, oh my gosh, I would never pay for this. So this person's not going to pay for this. And then we hallucinate. We act as if we can read somebody's mind. That's the second thing. And we know what they're thinking. But the fact of the matter is, you don't know what they're thinking. You can't read their mind unless you've got some really special talent. But 99.9% of us cannot read people's minds, even if you go, but I can tell by the look of, on their face. Maybe be careful doing that though, because you will inadvertently send a message. I don't think you can afford it. This isn't for you. And you can talk people out of hiring you. So when somebody asks you about your price, you give your price and you don't be afraid of your pricing. And even if there's some part of you that's, this is a new price and I feel a little uncomfortable with it. When you talk price, you have to be confident and you have to stand in your position of power, credibility, authenticity, and just give the price and allow for them to process and decide. Let them come back and go, oh, that's crazy expensive. I always say in my, I don't even know now, 27 years of sales experience, like I have given people my price many times and I rarely, if ever, have anybody clutch their pearls and be like, oh my gosh, Nikki, that's crazy. But sometimes we act as if somebody's going to do that. So you cannot be afraid to give pricing when you're asked and just be like, this is your price. And if you act, of course, that's my price. 9 out of 10 people are going to be like, yeah, of course, that's your price. Yeah, let's move forward. Let's go. whatever.
And I think also, as long as it's a fair price, you're not trying to gouge somebody. Of course, it's a fair price. Maybe they're just not the right person for what you're selling at that price.
Yeah. And it's totally okay. Not everybody is a client. I always say to people when they show up and they're like, I close 100% of everybody I talk to. And I always go, then you're doing something wrong. Like, you should not be closing 100% of everybody you talk to, because not everybody is a client. And it's okay for somebody to not be a client. Here's another, you probably know this one where I'm going, maybe. This, I always say, bless and release the people who are not a good fit. You don't have to be attached to earning every single person's business. What you're trying to do, the whole reason to be in business, is to be of service to the people who need you and the people who are ready for you. And somebody who is not on board with your pricing, it just means they're not ready. And it might mean that they're just not ready yet. And that's okay. Bless and release. They can come back when the timing is better, or you can have an opportunity to offer them some special deal down the road or whatever. But you don't need to be attached to earning every single person's business. It's the people who are ready for you right now. And if they don't like your price, they're just not your client. That's okay.
Now, Nikki, I've bombarded you with enough of your isms. Now I'm going to bombard you with some of my goofy questions of things that I've just been wondering about with Nikki. You're actually my second guest that is certified NLP, so that's neuro-linguistic programming, which always makes me slightly nervous to talk to somebody that's certified in this. So you're actually the second person I've talked to that's certified in this. But besides making people possibly nervous or feel unease, what other benefits do you get from being certified in NLP?
First of all, if a listener hasn't heard that term before, so it's the study of communication. And I use it in my work. I have an extensive background in it. So I'm master certified. I have over 1,200 classroom hours, which is significant. Most people with the same certification have 200 classroom hours. So I have a lot. The way that I use it is, and I'm going to give you my favorite quote, which is not an NLP quote, but I think it's the description of what NLP teaches and what I teach my clients, is blessed are the flexible, for they shall not be bent out of shape. The idea here is to learn how to be flexible in your conversation to put somebody at ease and to make it easy for them to move forward in a conversation with you should they choose to. Can it be used to manipulate people? Yes. Everything can be used for good or bad. I teach, especially when I get deep into NLP skills, like very specific skills, I will even teach clients, it's part of my training, please approach this with a high level of integrity, because people will feel abused by you if you act as if, ooh, I'm so sly, look at me, look what I can do. That just makes people feel gross. So again, relationship first, rapport always. And the foundation of everything that's taught from NLP, the foundation of NLP is rapport. It is about being flexible, putting the other person at ease so they can make decisions. It isn't about manipulating them into making a decision they don't want. That's not the purpose behind it. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. It sounds like a superpower almost in some ways.
Sometimes it feels like a superpower when, like everything, there's a blessing and a curse of it. I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody and I was trying really hard, because I understand language and I understand programming and patterns and habits and things like that. Some of the things they were saying, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is really their intent. So now I have to be really careful and ask and check to see, was this the intent of what you're trying to say, but not make it feel like, look at me, I know so much. And so it was an uncomfortable conversation. In the end, it went really well. And the person was able to go, when I think about the way I said, that's actually not what I meant. Let me say it in a different way. And then, oh gosh, that felt better for them, felt better for me. Now things are back on track. It is a superpower in that language is a superpower. Being able to speak somebody's language and do it in a kind, credible way feels really good to be around a person who knows how to do that.
This is another one of my goofy questions. Sales Maven, where did this name come from and what do you mean by Maven?
So when I was trying to decide on the name of my business, I knew that I didn't want to name it like Nikki Roush Consulting, because I don't really have an attachment to my last name. I'm just, nobody's ever asked me this, so I'm going to just be really candid with you here and frank. The last name that I use was from a previous marriage. I've just kept it because I've been known as Nikki Roush like the whole time. So when I was deciding to start my business, I didn't want to attach this last name to my business because who knows, I might change it. And I am now remarried, but still use the last name Roush. So I was thinking like, what could my business name be? And I really wanted to have the word sales in my business name. And many of the close people in my life were like, do not put sales in the name of your business. Nobody will hire you because everybody thinks sales is icky. And I was like, no, I'm committed because I'm going to show and teach that it's not icky. It can be done really well and with kindness and credibility. I didn't want to be called like the sales expert because that felt a little lame. And I came across this word maven and it means expert. And so hence the sales maven was born.
I didn't know that's what maven means.
Yeah, it means expert.
Oh, wow. I learned something new. I should probably look that up in the dictionary. I guess I had my own interpretation of maven.
What did you think it meant?
I thought it meant like a seductive woman, a maven. I don't know.
Wow. I wish it did now. No.
So it's like your sales seducing sales. I don't know. That's what I kind of thought it was. But
my gosh.
Okay. So here's another one of my lame questions. And this might be like an insider thing, so you don't have to answer this question.
Okay.
But the intro and outro of your podcast, is that you and you just altered your voice?
No, it's not me. It's actually somebody that you hire. That's what they do is voiceover. And it's just because you're asking me this question. So when I was deciding who to pick, you listen to all these different voiceover. They gave me, I think, a choice of, it was like three actresses and they had, each of them have seven voices that they used. So it was quite a bit of research going through this process to pick, what did I want her cadence to be? Did you want her to have a fun accent? But no, it is not me. It's a voiceover actress who I think her voice is, I really liked her voice. I wanted it to feel, again, everything with me is about being kind and being credible. So I wanted it to feel upbeat, kind, credible, and hey, let's go. Here we go. Here's the podcast.
Yeah, it does. But it sounded so close to your voice. I was like, she's like talking through a machine. Is that the sales maven doing that? So I'm glad. Okay, now you've dispelled that mystery for me. Okay, the last stupid question I've got for you.
I love these. These are fun.
So I saw in your bio that you have sold to NASA. So NASA seems, okay, if you're selling to them, they're going to have all kinds of hoops you got to go through and all of that. But did you ever get to actually go to any of the headquarters? And what was that like to sell to NASA?
I got to go to a very secure base. It's where they land the shuttle in California. Like this is like, you see them tow the shuttle away. It was quite a security protocol to get into the, just to even have the meeting to demonstrate the product that I was selling at the time. It was just interesting to go through that whole process of having to get all these approvals to even get onto the base. And then once you're on the base, to get in to be in the room with these people who work for NASA. At the time, I was selling encrypted audio conferencing equipment. And that's why NASA was interested in our product, because they wanted to use a wireless product and their communications cannot, they can't risk their communications being picked up by somebody who has the ability to do that. So they wanted our product because it had this encryption in it. It was a fun experience, but it wasn't probably as cool as it seems. It's just me sitting in a conference room demonstrating a product to these dudes that work for NASA.
But you saying, here, kitty, kitty, to NASA, that seems pretty cool.
It's fun to have, and it's fun for people to ask me about, oh my gosh, you sold to NASA. The space shuttle had been there the day before, and so I missed out on actually getting to see it. They had towed it the day before we got there, so I was like, dang it, I missed. There were a lot of things that, as a corporate salesperson, I got to do a lot of really fun things and see a lot of really cool things, but that was one that I missed out on.
Oh, it's still a really cool experience. Nikki, thank you so much for being on my podcast. How can people work with you? I know you have the Sales Maven Society, and tell us about all the things you got going on.
I do have the Sales Maven Society. That's my membership platform. It's a monthly membership where you get access to training content, quite a bit of sales training content. You get access to me in a private group, and you get access to me live twice a month. Plus, it's filled with the most amazing business owners and entrepreneurs from around the world. I feel really blessed every day for for this group of people. So that's one way, is to be in the Sales Maven Society. The second way is strategy sessions. So I do one-off strategy sessions for somebody. It's a 50-minute, you and me working very specific. Everything I give is tailored to your business, to your needs. And then the third way is my masterclasses, which I've mentioned a couple times. I teach 4 masterclasses a year on 4 different topics. So that's how you can work with me.
Cool. And then you have your podcast, which is an awesome podcast. And then you're offering a free download for us.
Yes. I have an ebook called Closing the Sale, and it's all around the last 3 steps of the selling staircase and building some confidence, giving you some language suggestions. So as a listener, you can get this for free by going to yoursalesmaven.com/balance. So yoursalesmaven.com/balance. And then you can download the ebook Closing the Sale. And then you'll be on my website. You'll get an email from me with the ebook and we'll be connected.
Awesome. You also have 2 books, The Selling Staircase, and we mentioned the other one, Buying Signals. Is that what it was called? Buying Signals?
I actually have 3 books, but yes, okay. those are two of my books, The Selling Staircase, which I do recommend if you're looking for a book on sales, because it's pretty comprehensive. Buying Signals, which breaks down what are those 17 buying signals. The first book that I ever wrote is called 6-Word Lessons on Influencing with Grace, and it's a bunch of NLP tips.
Oh, where is that available?
On Amazon. It's pretty much available wherever you would get a book, but you can definitely get it on Amazon.
Wow, that's so great. Nikki, I also want to just personally thank you. Besides being on my podcast through the Sales Maven Society, I met some really interesting people and I learned all kinds of stuff through you. And I have to say that it really made an impact on my business. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Heather. I really appreciate you.
And everyone has to go check you out.
I loved the questions you asked. They were so fun.
Oh, thank you. Hey, this is Heather. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you found value in the show, I'd really appreciate it if you gave me a rating on iTunes or just simply tell a friend about it. And if you're interested in learning more about my profit advising and coaching, please set up a discovery call by using the link in the show notes. All right. Thanks so much and see you next time.